Yeah, well, it was just on our own case, the school's perspective, we're back to full power. In Carrigallen, we've a number of sites leased on the town because we're waiting on an extension. So they were without power, but that's back in the last 48 hours. But the water has remained an issue where levels are dropping. And while there is generators out on the sites, it's just, maintaining the pressure has been a problem in the schools. So, you know, toilet facilities, washing facilities, it's caused issues around that, and we have to look after human dignity and whatnot. And, you know, so that's probably our major one here, just in the school. But locally, like, a lot of people have absolutely no power and haven't. And this is, we're into Thursday of the following week now. It's huge, and particularly a lot of families with small children, parents working. You know, I know one case of a house with four children under 6 years of age. No light, no heat. You can just imagine if that was any of our homes, what's going on in that house. And I suppose what I particularly have spoken about in the last 2 days is families of children with special needs, and families who have people who have medical devices in their homes with no electricity. And particularly, you know, I'm going to refer maybe to kids, families with kids on the autistic spectrum, who are so used to the same routine in their lives every day, and a change in that in homes like that, families are just absolutely stressed out. The children are stressed out. We can't imagine what the level of hardship that's in these homes, and the level of stress that's in them. And you know, while we have all the political dialogue and everything, the reality and the facts are that these people are struggling, and these people need to be prioritised and looked after. And you know, it's time for action, not words. I mean, you know, families who are dependent on that, they should have generators provided to them, be it temporarily or permanently. Particularly families with kids, and as I said, who have special needs, families who have people with serious medical conditions who require machines for breathing, oxygen machines, etc. They should have these things. I suppose it's very ironic that, you know, when we're talking about, and particularly in Leitrim, a lot of the issues are around fallen trees and forestry, etc. And we're talking about a green agenda in Ireland, which, by the way, there'll be nobody more into recycling, etc., than myself. But it's ironic that we because of land being bought up in Leitrim and being planted, not by people from the county, but by worldwide corporations, that we are the ones suffering here in the county. These people are suffering, and we're having to provide them with generators, which are actually burning diesel and petrol. So, I mean, somebody needs to call out all of these agendas and political things, because it doesn't actually make any sense. And as I say, you're speaking to somebody who is not an anti-green agenda. I am more for recycling and you know, having our air clear and whatnot. But the reality here is, if Leitrim is being used as a pawn in this country and the west of Ireland, extended, I know we're talking about an ocean on Sligo. Leitrim, Sligo, Roscommon, Galway, they're buying up land, they're planting it. But any day you look out over our counties, you see nothing, only if there's no cloud in the sky, clear blue skies. We are not the ones creating the huge pollution, but we are the ones that are being used as the agenda to meet our green climate targets set by the government and the EU, and we're not the ones creating a lot of this.
In terms of the agenda that was preparing for this severe weather event, in terms of the government, the ESB, we look to our counterparts in Northern Ireland. We see in Scotland, for example, that people are being compensated that have gone days without power. We see in Northern Ireland those vulnerable and elderly being prioritised in terms of power restoration. Do you think that inspiration needs to be taken from other countries in terms of how we're dealing with the aftermath and indeed preparing for the event before it happened?
Absolutely, it does. And I suppose just on the point you're making there, I just want to compliment the ESB crews, the fire brigades, the emergency services, the community guards, the farmers, the community hubs that are out there helping people. These are the real heroes. These are the people that's out on the ground. You know, prioritise and making plans is all done by people who are probably sitting in offices well away from where these problems are today, meaning well, but the facts of the matter are that there isn't enough of planning. I can give an example in the case of my own. I'm from Barnacoola in Leitrim, whereby five houses right beside my home houses, five houses where the people in the houses are 60 plus, 60 to 85 years of age. In a little group there is no power, and has been no power in any one of them five houses. This is technically day seven. It started last Friday, so we're back. We're on Thursday now, or Friday it's day eight. So they had no power for the last 8 days, and that's just one small example again. So prioritising, you know, I understand. Yes. We have to get power back into like the nursing homes, all of that. These have to be prioritised. They have to have, there has to be systems put in place that there is, in the event of a power outage, a backup facility for all of these and for that. Now, you know, we will hear people coming on and answering, oh, well, this has been done and that has been done. It should never be being done. It should already be there. And these, you know, in the event, and I'm going to say this, I was born in the 70s. I grew up in the 80s and 90s in a house where there was six children. And I don't remember going back when Ireland was a lot poorer than it currently is, ever having an outage like there currently is, or having people being stuck in rural areas, not able to basically get out of their own homes, not able to go down their roads. Like, we're talking about... we're talking about 2025, when this country is awash with money and people are struggling. And the powers that be, and I'm not getting into a political blame game here because I'm not interested in that, but the powers that be are genuinely, and I'm saying this to you, the powers that be, you're so far removed from the reality of these things. You are the one sitting in your homes with electricity, with heat, and all of the necessary commodities. What about the people who have no electricity today, who have an electric car, who have an air-to-water heat supply system that's depending on electricity? What about them? There's grants for all of these, but there's no point in having grants when we can't guarantee that we'll have power. And what we have to think about is the age population, a number of people, age population-wise, and I'm not being ageist here when I say 65-plus, in Leitrim, 18% of our population in the last census was over 65 years of age. Our families who have people who are very ill and are at home, and they're tending to them at home, they're caring for them at home, who need medical devices 24/7, who have children who are on, you know, on the spectrum, or special needs kids who are so used to routine. We are letting these people down, and these are the facts. We had a better system in the 1980s and 90s, and lots of people come on, and the keyboard warriors would probably shout me down for this, but I never remember growing up in rural Ireland seeing what we're currently seeing in 2025. And, you know, there's two ways of looking at it. There's a huge amount of people under huge stress and pressure out there. But the communities, and I have to compliment the communities in rural Ireland who have come together and helped and are helping their neighbours and helping their friends, all the community hubs, all the local volunteers. It would just make you very proud to be Irish and to be part of these communities and helping out. But nationally, you know, if we're going to plant trees, and I have no issue with that, we have to have proper infrastructure. We can't go on the facts, oh, well, we're putting this in place now. It's what's already been let happen is the reason why there's fallen power lines. And I'd like to just reach out particularly to the ESP crews, because we know this is the second major storm. How many people, men and women, who are working with the ESP crews or subcontracted in, have not seen their family very little over the last 5 to 6 weeks? Because this is just not just this week. There was Storm Dara previous to that, and there was outages before Christmas. So these people are suffering while to try and restore power to the people who are really badly stuck now. So a huge shout out to all of the people involved in that. But no, you know, sitting down around tables and talking, the talk shops, that's what this country has become, talk shops. Stop talking, take action. We know what height the trees go. We know where they are. Either set power lines underground, which I know is huge costs, or make sure that there's not trees planted within a certain area of them. And if we drive the countryside now, you know, we have to look at what we're planting. And I have, again, no agenda here. But like, if we look at, yes, the ash dieback, so the ash trees are falling. But the majority of our deciduous native trees, they're still standing. The fact is that the root system of these evergreen coniferous trees is more of, it doesn't penetrate the soil as deeply. So in actual fact, it's much easier in a situation where you have strong winds, where they are going to topple over and fall. And, you know, again, on that, you know, there's a lot of local farmers who have planted this, and this has been their pensions, and their lives are destroyed now by these forestries falling. But I think around the national planning, this was opened up whereby, you know, I heard a case yesterday of a Dutch teacher's pension fund with land in Leitrim. A lot of people who have no allegiance to this area of the country, who have bought land and planted it because of the grants that they're getting, but they're not the ones. They're not the families that are without power today. Some of them have never stood in the property. They bought it. It was planted for them. They know nothing about it. Only, I wish they're quite entitled to get the grants off it. But what about the ordinary local young family who want to buy the land next door and can't buy that piece of land because it's been bought up by major corporations?